Having said that, there are multiple experiments in cows and other ruminants in which hypocalcemia has been induced in healthy cows. Like, for instance, we have induced hypocalcemia in dry cows for 24 hours. Not clinical, just borderline subclinical hypocalcemia. So we decrease blood calcium from 2.1, 2.3 millimolars to about 1.6 millimolars. And that was sufficient to alter intake of cows. That was sufficient to attenuate the ability of innate immune response of those animals to be at the same level as a cow that we did not induce hypocalcemia. So I like to believe that even borderline values of low blood calcium that persist for a few days is not just associated, it's actually part of the process of causing negative impacts on the cow.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Adasail, provider of SmartAmine M, the best-in-class rumen-protected methionine product for dairy producers who want to optimize milk production. Kemin invites you to optimize your herd's performance. Dive in at kemin.com/dairy. Birdus Nutrition, the fatty acid people. Fortiva, creating ingredients for impact to support animal resilience and health. Learn more at fortivaimpact.com. Barnes is your trusted partner for Colon Plus FC, enzymes, yeast products, and macro minerals. To learn more, visit barnes-na.com/animal nutrition. Vitagro, the gut health experts, rumen protected, right where it matters. Sponsored by S. Milko Inc., specialists in calf and baby farm animal nutrition, delivering precision-formulated milk replacers. Priority IAC, the only company bringing the fields of microbiology and nutrition together.
Welcome to another episode of the Dairy Nutrition Black Belt Podcast. I'm Rick Lundquist, your host for today. And today we've got the pleasure of talking with Dr. Jose Santos, professor of dairy nutrition and reproduction at the University of Florida. Dr. Santos is well-versed in many areas of dairy nutrition, health, reproduction, but today we're going to hone in on mineral-related disorders, especially during the transition period, and how we can prevent them. So welcome, Jose. I am sure most of our audience is familiar with you and your research, but would you mind giving us just a brief bio of yourself and your research interests?
Sure. Yeah. It's a pleasure, Rick, to join this podcast. Well, as you mentioned, I'm a professor in the Department of Animal Sciences. prior to that, I worked at the University of California, Davis. And during my education, I spent time at the University of Arizona, UC Davis, and at the University of Sydney in Australia.
Very good. And your research interests?
Well, it's really the dairy cow, yeah. So I've had phases in my life in which I focused primarily on reproduction. And probably in the last 6 or 7 years, a major focus has been on nutrition and nutrition health interactions. So anything that involves dairy cow health, production performance, things that affect embryo development, reproductive biology, I have some interest. So it depends then on the opportunity to fund research. Huh?
I've noticed over the years your interests are very, very wide. Yes. And by the way, I wanted to say congratulations on another successful Florida Ruminant Nutrition Conference last month. You always have a very interesting and unique topics at that conference, more distinct from other conferences, and this year was no exception. So great job on that.
Adasail, a global leader in nutritional solutions and the provider of SmartAmine M. Visit milkpay.com to calculate your return on investment when you balance your feed with amino acids, and to learn how SmartAmine M is the product for dairy producers who want to optimize milk production, component levels, and the lifetime performance of their herds.
So anyway, as I said, we're going to hone in on mineral-related disorders, particularly during the transition period. So Starting with calcium regulation, what is hypocalcemia and what are the consequences for the cow? And just to follow up on that relatively new term, and probably more consequential, is dyscalcemia. Can you expand on these topics?
So the concentrations are tightly regulated. And the reason for that is because an abrupt change, either an increase or decrease, induces cell death. Yeah, calcium is what we call a signaling molecule within cells. So the body evolves such that concentrations have to be within a range. So for most mammals, if you get adult mammals, that concentration is going to be anywhere between 2 and 2.5 millimolars. So between 8.2 and 10 or 11 milligrams per deciliter. Okay. The exception will be very young animals. So a baby calf, for example, will have 3 millimolars, 12 milligrams, 12.5, just because of skeletal development. So every time concentrations go below, if we focus on hypocalcemia, that can affect multiple systems. You know, probably the one that we tend to think most often is muscle skeletal, just because muscle contractions depend on calcium. So there will be flaccid paralysis. The cow will go down, for example, if we're talking about dairy cows, and eventually she can stop breathing and even die if it is a pretty severe case of hypocalcemia. But on the other hand, if you have hypercalcemia, that can affect contractility of the heart. Probably most veterinarians who are in a hurry and they treat a cow, or farm staff who treat the cow with IV calcium in the jugular vein, and they let that run very quickly, that causes fibrillation of the heart and it cannot complete a contraction, so the animal eventually dies. So these changes in concentrations of calcium can have impacts on the cow. Obviously, spontaneously, we tend to not have hypercalcemia unless you have animals consuming plants that have active vitamin D3. You know, there are some plants that have calcitriol as a component and then can cause calcification of soft tissue. But otherwise, that's not a common finding. But hypocalcemia is a lot more common, particularly in dairy cows and in the first days of lactation. You made a point of dyscalcemia, which would be a dysregulation of blood concentration of calcium that typically would persist for more days. It would be an animal that is hypocalcemic, but for several days. And that tends to be associated with disease. So cows that have, for example, difficult calving, have inflammation of the reproductive tract, metritis, they tend to be those animals that are less capable of regulating blood calcium and rebounding from that drop immediately after colostrum milking. So those tend to be the cows that will have negative impacts during lactation. And there's a lot of discussions. There are people who believe in one thing, people who believe in another thing. But the reality is that obviously a case of milk fever, you know, your clinical case of hypocalcemia is quite disastrous. Those cows have a much greater risk of any disease you think of, so they won't survive very long. The issue becomes a little gray when you talk about these animals that don't have the clinical signs of hypocalcemia, but their blood calcium is borderline. If that is only for a day, it tends to not be associated with a lot of negative effects. But if it persists for 2 or 3 days, then that tends to be associated with negative outcomes for the cow. Having said that, there are multiple experiments in cows and other ruminants in which hypocalcemia has been induced in healthy cows. Like, for instance, we have induced hypocalcemia in dry cows for 24 hours. Not clinical, just borderline subclinical hypocalcemia. So we decrease blood calcium from 2.1, 2.3 millimolars to about 1.6 millimolars. And that was sufficient to alter intake of cows. That was sufficient to attenuate the ability of innate immune response of those animals to be at the same level as a cow that we did not induce hypocalcemia. So I like to believe that even borderline values of low blood calcium that persist for a few days is not just associated, it's actually part of the process of causing negative impacts on the cow.
Looking to maximize your herd's potential? Elevate performance with Kemin's cutting-edge encapsulation technologies, including rumen-protected choline, methionine, and lysine. Kemin's advanced choline and amino acid technologies ensure precise nutrient delivery, boosting milk yield and enhancing herd health. Trust Kemin, the experts in encapsulation, to take your herd to the next level. Learn more today at kemin.com/dairy.
So, you know, like you said, one would expect the calcium to drop immediately after calving, right? I mean, cows producing as much milk as we get out of cows now. It's the recovery period where the big issues are, right?
Yeah, the major issue really is the colostrum production. That is one. So the more colostrum she produces, the more calcium she loses, yeah? Colostrum has twice the concentration of colostrum, of calcium per liter than regular milk does. So regular milk has 1.1 grams per liter. Colostrum has 2.2, 2.3 grams per liter. So it's that a sudden loss that triggers the effect. And that starts even a few hours before calving because the calcium needs to be sequestered into the mammary gland because the cow cannot eject continuously colostrum. So it accumulates in the mammary gland for a few hours before it gets milked out. The issue is that at the same time, cows develop disease. Yeah? She has this event of calving, and inflammation is linked to a depression in blood calcium concentrations. There's literature in the sepsis world in humans that show that people that undergo sepsis or have a massive inflammatory response, which is not the most common situation in the cow, but perhaps some animals that have endotoxemia after a severe case of mastitis or metritis, they would have those symptoms, and calcium is shunted out of the blood vessels, and they go into the abdominal cavity, they go into some tissues. Those data are not very well characterized in dairy cows, but there is literature in pigs as a model for humans that shows that you get a loss of calcium from the vasculature into the peritoneal cavity or into the liver tissue.
Very interesting area. It sounds like we got a lot to learn too, huh?
Yeah. A lot of times we don't have the data in cows. We assume that these events are conserved between species. It may not always be the case, yeah? It may not always be the case.
So, Jose, having said that, I think we're going to probably split this into two episodes now. So we've covered a lot of the metabolism and stuff too, but maybe in the next episode we can get into some practical areas like dietary interventions and stuff that we can use to prevent what you've just described.
Yeah.
So with that, I think we'll conclude this episode. I really appreciate it. And then we will be back with another episode here to discuss some practical aspects of how we can prevent these issues on the farm. Thank you.
Thank you.